Welcome back to Jays Talk Plus. I'm Blake Murphy, and no matter how well things are going for the Jays, Jays fans cannot escape the anxiety that just makes them play out hilarious scenarios. Getting questions in the text line and on Twitter about, well, what if Monday and Tuesday's games are both rained out? Would they have to play a doubleheader Wednesday and a game Thursday? Honestly, they would probably just cancel one of them and let the Jays play 161, unless it really, really mattered. But you're not making a wildcard team play Thursday, doubleheader Wednesday, and then Thursday, and then right in the wildcard series. That would be, I mean, at that point, it would be whatever the standing scenarios, it would be worth it for the Jays to just forfeit. Yeah, we don't need to go that far with it. Joining us now, my pal and yours from the Spin Rate podcast over at The Athletic, it's Drew Fairservice. Drew, how are you, buddy?
I am doing well. I have a non-Blue Jays fans outlook. I'm going to get myself into trouble, in fact, but let's get started.
What is the outlook? What are you talking about here?
I'm in a group chat with the guys on my baseball team, and I said we need to start preparing ourselves for the possibility that the Blue Jays might win the World Series. I am bullish. I am bullish on the Blue Jays as we sit here on August 3rd or whatever the date is.
It is October 3rd. You were within 2 months. That's not bad.
What did I say?
You said August. Drew, your kids should be at school. Well, maybe not at 3:02 p.m., but in October, I hope you haven't given them an extra month of summer vacation, man.
No, I am in full swing of like hockey parent life. So I am well aware that it is October. Apologies for my previous slip up.
Well, you're just sleepy because you were at the, they weren't with you in the gym at 6 a.m. Although in this case, it's a freezing cold hockey arena with terrible coffee, I'm sure.
I bring the coffee in from outside. I don't leave it up to chance anymore.
That's good. I will say I am quite nostalgic in the dead of winter when I smell hot chocolate, like bad hot chocolate. It reminds me very much of like, I'll go region with it, Duncan McIntosh Arena in Cambridge or Carl Hometh Arena. I'm sure you have your favorites as well. The Blue Jays may do exactly what you're saying, Drew. They may mess around and win the whole thing. I don't think that is probably going to happen if we're putting the math on it. However, this is the best offense in the American League, and that goes a pretty long way when you're trying to size up the six teams in the American League.
It does, and I think that they have done such a good job of positioning their defense this year, other than when poor Kevin Gausman is on the hill. But I think that when they're able to go down to just four starters, and when, you know, the bullpen is not perfect by any stretch of the imagination, but like they've been getting outs and they're good at getting outs, and John Schneider seems to be pretty adept at managing them and getting them the rest that they need while also balancing that with the need for work. Like, I don't know. They've won 90 games. There's potentially three left, as you said, the fatalistic fans among us who might be worried about weather and acts of God. But they are feeling, maybe that's just because they've been beating up on the poor Red Sox, but like other than the series against the Yankees and maybe going back to like the series against the Angels when they got swept at home, like this is what it was supposed to be like all year. And it's not realistic that the Blue Jays are going to go out. They weren't going to be a 110-win team like the Dodgers that just like wins every night. But right now, at this time of year, they feel like the team that people were so excited about, the team that was getting so much shine preseason, the team that was projected to be the best team in the division. You know, the projections are projections. The Yankees hit their like 99th percentile outcome for the first 3 months of the season, which kind of put the division to bed in a way. But like, this is what it was supposed to look like. This is the team that everyone thought they were getting. It's here, right? Whether or not Bo Bichette went 0 for May or like Teoscar Hernandez looked so lost for so long, like at the end right now, Teoscar's got like a 130 weighted runs created plus, right? Like he's the same guy he's been. Bo Bichette is on the cusp of a four and a half win season again. This is what they were supposed to look like. They're rounding into form. I hate to say something cliched and something that is going to put the big hex on the whole thing, but like they're rounding into form at exactly the right time. And they're going to be a fearsome opponent for every other playoff team. If it was me, I would say that if they were facing the Yankees in a 7-game series, I would favor the Blue Jays. Maybe I'm some kind of crazed homer, but I don't know. The vibes are good. The vibes are, when Teoscar's going well, the vibes are always on point. And that's how it feels right now.
The vibes are good, but so is every spot in the order. And that's, you know, you're right, Drew, that preseason projections are what they are, and they're just kind of a range of possible outcomes. The Jays were projected to perhaps win the AL East, and a lot of people picked them to. They've beat their win projection total. It's just like they didn't let the Yankees win all those games early in the season. This is, you know, the Jays kind of did their part in the win-loss column, and the Yankees just happened to do more. So, you know, there have been times where this team didn't look as good, to be sure, and there are some question marks that we'll get into. But let me throw this context at you in terms of what this offense looks like. And you could go a lot of ways with it. Average, OBP, OPS, they're number one in all of those. They're number one in the AL in WRC+, which controls for park factors and a number of other things. Here's the big one for me, though, Drew. Raimel Tapia has been 10% worse than an average hitter in baseball this year. He is the only regular for this team who's been below average at the plate, and he's only 10% below average. It is pretty remarkable how even the Kevin Biggios and Santiago Espinals, and we would have said heading into the season, the Danny Jansons, have been able to fill in at the bottom of the order, fill in as bench guys, and continue hitting. Like, yeah, this doesn't extend to Jackie Bradley Jr. and Bradley Zimmer, who are never going to have a bat in their hands in the playoffs anyway, unless a game goes like 22 innings. But it's pretty remarkable how deep this team has gone from a position player and a hitting perspective. When you project the team ahead or just measuring your confidence level, let's picture this team as it's currently constructed versus what maybe we kind of thought last year's team was rounding into, which was, okay, Springer, Vlad, Bo, and Teoscar are really good at the top, and it's a bunch of question marks and holes after that. Are you more confident in a depth offense like this that doesn't have, you know, a 166 WRC plus in it than you would be three or four guys carrying the whole thing?
Yeah, I think that the Blue Jays have been a surprise or have really adapted to, at the risk of giving them too much like credit, but like they've adapted to the offensive environment. And not only do they have the best offense overall, but they're hitting for average. And for a long time, you know, we would joke, or even when it was out of frustration, that like their number one offensive threat was like the RBI groundout, right? Where they were getting guys into scoring position or getting guys to third base with less than two out, and then they were scoring on a groundout because, you know, that's when you have Vlad in the middle of the order and he's having the kind of season that he's having, that happens. But, like, that is testament to the fact that they get on base, all of them, in bunches, and the line keeps moving. And they have, you know, there's no 40-home run guy in the midst, but what's Springer up to, 23? You know, 40 doubles from Vlad and 40 doubles probably from Bo Bichette as well. Teoscar's up to, what, 26 or 7 home runs? Like, it's there, you know, and to say nothing of Matt Chapman. So like the home run is always there, especially as when the offense is going well, that's where those runs come in bunches, because right now they're built for the big inning, but they're still able to kind of like eke out a small inning or create an opportunity here and there. So I think that absolutely you want to be able to take advantage of. So if there is an inning where the opposition makes a mistake on defense, which is, I mean, you think back to the way the Blue Jays beat up on the Red Sox this year. That's exactly what that was. The Red Sox handed them so many outs in different situations. The 28-5 game, the drop and fly balls that are you know, pop flies are going to land on the pitcher's rubber or the inside the park grand slam. But like when you have a long lineup, you can take advantage of those mistakes. And while it's easy to be critical of the Blue Jays when you are looking for reasons to be critical of them because of the way that they do hit into double plays or the way that they do hit the ball on the ground, at the same time, those hits, when they do come in bunches, because you've got so many talented guys and so much offense that can come from so many different places, from Teoscar Hernandez, who has, you know, really turned it on, from Matt Chapman, who's only been like league average for the past, whatever, month or so, had some kind of rough times, but just he's so consistent in his approach. He's so consistent in the way that he hits the ball hard in a long way to the middle of the park, because that's really what's working for him. But a guy who's more than capable of taking a mistake and absolutely destroying it.
And from
all of this is like...
I was just going to say, and from a process standpoint, we've seen Bo Bichette improve his kind of selective aggression at the plate. We've seen Teoscar Hernandez cut the chase rate down. We've seen Matt Chapman is almost the league leader in pitches per plate appearance. It's a process side thing too. And that, I think, gives me a little bit more confidence that can sustain as it will tech bro it here, Drew. It can scale.
This offense definitely scales, especially when, as you said, there's not like the one, the WRC 166 guy in the midst, except that there is, right? Like, that's what Vladimir Guerrero Jr. is waiting to be unleashed, waiting to be unlocked from whatever, if it's fatigue, if it's a little bit of a hitch in his swing or just a little bit of bad process. But like, that is not an unachievable floor for him in a lot of ways, where, you know, maybe that's the key piece. So right now the Blue Jays have been like a 130 weighted runs created plus team since beginning of September. And that's from all while getting like not a lot from Vlad, but it's always right there. It's always lurking. The power is always there. The insanely hard hit ball that eats up infielders because it's coming at you at 115, 116, the ability to go the other way, the ability to use the you know, power to all fields, it's all right there. And if that's the thing that is the one switch that needs to click, then that's where they are going to be when it comes to like, what are they going to do are they going to win the World Series? As I said earlier, like if Vlad gets hot and everybody else is just like where they are right now, physically in terms of the shape of their swing and their approach, like that's a really, really, really tough team to beat.
It is. And just one more way to contextualize the depth here and, you know, the role of Vlad's played in maybe the ceiling not feeling as high, but the depth being there. By batting order position, the Jays are average in production from the 2 and 4 spots, but they're top 10 everywhere else, and they're number one in the league from 5 through 9. You could also do that by position and their top 10 and everything. There are just no soft spots really on the hitter side. Drew, the other big question, and we know Jose Berríos is a question mark, but show me the team that doesn't have question marks as you get to 4 or 5 in the rotation at the end of, or the start of October rather. And I know Houston doesn't have them, but Houston doesn't count just yet. The bullpen was the biggest question mark heading into the trade deadline, the biggest question mark coming out of the trade deadline, and it remains a bit of a fascinating philosophical, because the bullpen since that deadline, since you can go back to the Charlie Montoyo change just to draw kind of a line in the sand around the midseason mark, this bullpen has been one of the very best in baseball, and the swinging strike rate has gone up a little bit, but it's still average at best in terms of their ability to miss bats. Has this bullpen shown you enough in the second half that you're not as concerned about that because this group has been able to find ways?
I am not as concerned about that. I think they've added some key depth pieces where, not unlike what we've just described with the batting order, like there are a variety of guys you can go to in a variety of situations. It's not the set in stone, this is our 7th inning guy, this is our 8th inning guy, this is our 9th inning guy. Obviously, the 9th inning is sort of settled, but, you know, that works, I think, to the Blue Jays' credit. Well, it also can work to their detriment in that there is not that overpowering guy who is the 1B to Romano's 1A right now. But you can count on, you know, so many of those guys back there. Jimmy Garcia has been so good. Tim Meza has been pretty good, you know, obviously, in a small sample as a reliever. So gives up a home run to Aaron Judge that sort of like smears his numbers, and we start to kind of zoom in a little bit. And same with Anthony Bass, who's been a little bit homer prone, but still very good. And you know, when you've got a guy like Simber, who you can put into any kind of situation, you could bring him in the 4th inning, you could bring him in with 2 outs in the 9th inning. I think it gives him a lot of flexibility, and I think it gives him a lot of, you know, just options when it comes to how and when you want to approach guys. I think you can start to get into some funkier numbers too, which the team probably would know better than anyone, in terms of who on the opposition is would struggle against maybe more of the sinker slider type, who's more vulnerable against more of a changeup kind of guy, and who is maybe more vulnerable to velocity. So, you know, whether or not you want to play those kind of matchups or just kind of look at where you've got, what you've got coming up. But I think that depth gives them a lot of things that they can try, and a lot of ways that they can approach getting through the last 6, 9, 12, 15 outs in a game, depending on what's been going on with the starter.
You mentioned how the front office will be scouting ahead for those opponents and trying to optimize it. Let's do a little of that scouting ahead ourselves. We know the Jays will play Seattle or Tampa Bay in the wild card series. I crunched some numbers earlier, Drew, using some using the Vegas lines as win probabilities and playing out all the different scenarios. Still, that can happen. There are 80 different scenarios. 76% of the time, the Jays host Seattle. 13% of the time they visit Seattle. So let's focus on Seattle first. Some real questions about that offense and their ability to hit at a playoff level. With Julio Rodriguez potentially being activated tonight and Jared Kelnick looking legitimate since his latest recall from the minors, how do you feel about the Mariners offense as a group?
I don't think that I'm especially worried about the Mariners offense. I think the Mariners pitching staff is sort of going to be their calling card. I think, you know, Jesse Winker is a good hitter, and Eugenio Suarez has got some big hits from the Mariners and has a good track record. He's a guy who hits the ball over the fence. But they've won 90 games or 89 games or whatever it might be. They're a pretty good team. I don't know that I'm as worried about it. I think that you can, you know, they're as vulnerable as anybody to swing and miss. Right. Like, it's not, you know, when Caitlin and I were talking about it on the most recent episode of Spin, right, one thing that I kind of came back to was maybe I was worried about, not worried about, but look to avoid a guy like Gausman against a team like Cleveland, right, where like Cleveland can like poke and slap it around and that can, you know, drive a guy like Kevin Gausman up the wall. But like when it comes to swing and miss, you know, that's what he offers in big chunks, and that's going to be tough for any team. Right, you know, and Seattle included, Julio is really good. You know, JP Crawford, Cal Raleigh, like they've got a lot of guys that can hit. But to your point, I don't think that they're not an elite offense. And I think the thing that's going to get them anywhere that they want to go is the thing that's gotten them there so far. And you know, if Luis Castillo is effective and if Logan Gilbert can be dominant, those are things that work in Seattle's favor. So yeah, I think that, you know, the things that make the Blue Jays tick and the things that have gotten them this far from a starting pitching perspective, I think are the things that would work against Seattle, right? You know, a guy like Manoah, who gets so much soft contact, and Gausman, who's got so much swing and miss, and Ross Stripling, who's another soft contact guy. I think that maybe the Mariners are, I don't know, young is exactly how I describe it, but I think that they're as vulnerable as anybody because they're not that dominant offense. There's not that, you know, who on the Mariners lineup is, other than maybe Julio, is like a home run waiting to happen, you know, scoring position in the batter's box kind of guy. I'm not super worried. And that's sort of the thing that to bring this full circle back from what I started at the beginning. The Blue Jays are such a good team that I don't think they need to not worry, but like they're good, right? The other teams need to be worried about what they're going to do against the Blue Jays. The other teams need to be worried about how they're going to try to get the Blue Jays out, as we've just discussed. And I think, and be worried about like, how are we going to score 3 runs off Kevin Gausman? You know, who's going to come out of that bullpen? I think the Blue Jays present a lot of problems for no matter who they play. So it'll be interesting to see. And I think that Toronto Seattle coming to Toronto seems like the most likely thing right now. And if you're a Blue Jays fan, you got to feel pretty good about that matchup.
Your quick take on, I know you love a young developing pitcher. I assume Castillo and Ray would go games 1 and 2 for the Mariners, and maybe they do some piggyback stuff and Marco Gonzalez is involved in some way. But Logan Gilbert or George Kirby is, to me, a fascinating choice in that third spot. They're both about 25. They have their ERAs are within 0.01 of each other. They get it done a different way, but they've had almost identical seasons. Do you have a lean which way you'd go if you were Seattle?
I think I might push Ray back between you and me. Like, he has not been great in the second half. Like, pitched to maybe like a 4 ERA or something like that. Wasn't particularly good against the Oakland there on Sunday. I think I might try to stay away from Ray. I think a big hard throwing right-hander like Gilbert is maybe the giving you yourself the best, your best chance against the Blue Jays offense. Castillo, also a guy who doesn't give up a lot of home runs. I think he's only given up 6 or 7 home runs since he joined Seattle. So for me, it's probably Gilbert that I would do everything. I think it depends on what happens in game one. So if you're Seattle right. and you lose game one, you're like, we got to win game two. Does that mean that you push, you do everything you can to get Robbie Ray in there? Or do you feel better about having Logan Gilbert go again, a big, hard throwing right-hander? Maybe that's something that can help you, or you think that that's your best shot against an offense like the Blue Jays. But sort of, again, coming back to what we said, you know, getting all 8.5 viable Blue Jays, hitters is a tough task for anybody. Everybody is in tough there. That doesn't mean that on a given one day, somebody can't go out there and have all their best stuff and be able to mow the Blue Jays down. But like, that's a lot easier said than done. And if it's your first, postseason start or the first time your team is in the playoffs since 2001, don't have everything, locked down, well, then you're in for a long afternoon.
Yeah, and the Logan Gilbert thing is interesting. I'll tell you right now, if he's starting, I don't know if they give out wild card series MVPs. Like, they give out MVP every other round, but this is the first time we have like a wild card series like this. If Logan Gilbert's pitching this one, I'm putting a little a penny or two down on Teoscar Hernandez. Suddenly, you look at the numbers and he's like a top 10, maybe even top 5 guy in the league against good fastballs. And Logan Gilbert throws that 96 mile an hour heater more than half the time. So that'd be a fun one. What about the Tampa Bay Rays, Drew? Obviously they have a little bit more of the kind of Spurs, Patriots, Magic, pixie dust feel to them when it comes to the playoffs. But I think on paper, they're not going to, like, I don't think your answer is going to be much different than it was for Seattle.
No, I think in particular the Rays, the Rays are not a strong offensive club. You know, they score their runs, but I like the way that the Rays play. I love that they just run and run and run and run and run and try to score as many runs as they can, putting that quote unquote pressure on the defense. And Randy Rosarina gets himself thrown out so often and so freely that I enjoy that. But the Rays they're not the Rays that they were last year when they won 100 games. They're not the Rays who have tortured and tormented Blue Jays and Blue Jays fans for so long, and especially if they are not able to be at home, right? If the Blue Jays and Rays are playing, it's going to be here. And the Rays, I don't believe, are an especially strong road team this year relative to their success at home. So I just think it's a matter of just trying to minimize the mistakes, trying to control the running game, I guess, whenever you can, but really just trying to go out and do the things that make you successful. Sometimes we've seen that with the Rays where they can slap the ball around and kind of pick up their run of hits. And when the Rays are doing the things that they do, it makes everybody, especially the older kind of older stance crowd, love it. They love to watch them slap it around and take those extra bases. And maybe that's what it takes in the playoffs. That's the sort of the cliche. But look, the big inning, going for a big inning is never out of style. It's never a bad idea to hit a 3-run home run. So then I don't know that that's something that the Rays especially have in their arsenal, given the state of their offense. And I mean, you look at some of the numbers that some of their players, like, Wander Franco didn't have an especially good year, missed a lot of time with injury. Oliver Rosarino has been pretty good. But like, they're not as formidable a team. Especially if we're able to get our Blue Jays like baggage set aside, you wouldn't necessarily favor the Rays in a 3-game series against the Blue Jays. But again, it's a 3-game series. Anything can happen.
All right, Drew, that's enough forward-looking. I want to look slightly backwards with you before I let you go. The Jays so far this year have had 32 pitchers pitch for them. They've had 20 position players receive at least one plate appearance. Otto Lopez is at the bottom with still just one plate appearance this year. Gabriel Moreno has 65. There are three guys in between them in plate appearances this year, none of whom are on the roster anymore. Can you name them?
Zach Collins?
Nope. He had more than Moreno.
He had more than Moreno. Oh, my gosh. I don't know that I can. Who else is there?
You got the right position. even the right current team, actually.
There's another catcher?
There's another left-handed hitting catcher who saw a few plate appearances and then joined the Pirates off of waivers.
Oh, my God. Oh, I can't even remember his name.
Tyler Heineman.
Tyler Heineman, of course. Okay, I wouldn't have remembered that.
I was just going to tell you the other two. Gosuke Kato and Vinny Capra.
I would not have got either of those, even though Gosuke Kato, shout out, a fierce Redditor himself. You find him, if you head over to the Blue Jays subreddit, you might see Gosuke Kato.
Jeez. Okay, so of the 32 pitchers who pitched this year, I was going to ask you one about starters, and the answer was going to be Anthony Bonda because he was the opener for a game. But the opener stuff feels like it's cheating, making the making trivia questions about that. So I'll go with this. Whit Merrifield is one of those 32. He pitched one inning. Two pitchers this year pitched one inning or fewer as well. Two other pitchers, rather. So there are two guys below or matched with Merrifield in innings pitched this year. Do you have any earthly idea?
Foster Griffin?
Nope, he went two.
He went two?
He did.
That's terrible.
That was a studly performance, that Foster Griffin outing.
It was. How many outs did Casey Lawrence get? He couldn't have got that many.
No, he got a lot. He threw 15 and two-thirds innings.
Oh, 15.
Yeah.
Man, the baseball season is long.
It is long. I'll just give them to you in the interest of time. Sean Anderson threw an inning.
Right.
And Bowden Francis got two outs.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I would not have gotten that. I forgot all about Bowden Francis. There you go.
Yeah. I was just going to make you name all 32 guys. And shout out to Andrew Vasquez. I'm sure he would have come up at some point. Drew, fair service, man. Maybe we'll see how the week plays out. We'll see how next week and off days play out. Maybe we'll remember some 2015, 2016 playoff stuff sometime soon too. But thank you so much for taking the time today and enjoy the heck out of this weekend, man.
I will do all of those things, Blake. Thank you so much.
Drew, fair service of the Spin Rate podcast. You can follow him at Drew Groff on Twitter. Love talking to Drew about baseball. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to be joined by someone I love talking to about basketball. Oren Weisfeld of Raptors Republic, The Guardian, everywhere else, dabbled with some Blue Jays stuff on the weekend. Huge Toronto Star feature on Alek Manoah and what makes him so special, not just as a pitcher, but as a person. We'll talk about that Alek Manoah piece with Oren Weisfeld next on Jays Talk Plus on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Welcome back to Jays Talk Plus. I'm Blake Murphy. Toronto Blue Jays in action tonight, we think. We'll see. 7:05 first pitch if that game is on time. At the Orioles, it's Jose Berríos against Dean Kramer. Ben Wagner on the call for you on the Sportsnet Radio Network. It's rainy right now, though, so we'll see. We'll see how it goes. We'll tee up that game in a little bit. Just in case it happens. Right now, though, joined by my pal from Raptors Republic, The Guardian, Toronto Star, everywhere else, Oren Weisfeld. Oren, how are you, buddy?
Hey, man. I'm doing well. Transitioning from the Raptors to the Blue Jays here, I feel like this guy named Blake Murphy, but thanks for having me.
Yeah, stop taking my bits, man. Next Samson's going to be living on your couch. This is too much.
No, I don't have room for him, unfortunately.
So you are primarily a Raptors guy, basketball guy, but you jump all over the place at The Guardian, at Toronto Star. This is not even your first foray into Jays stuff this year. You had this great feature on Alek Manoah called The Two Sides of Blue Jays Ace Alek Manoah and Why He's Reaching Baseball Stardom at Just the Right Time. Tell me what went into the reporting of this feature, how you dug in and how you got to know Alek Manoah a little bit more as a player and as a figure around the team.
Sure. Well, first, I mean, to start the feature, I didn't really have any intention of talking about Alek off the field and kind of all the nice things that he's done in his life. I really just noticed a guy who was extremely entertaining, and I'm a casual baseball fan, but it was like every fifth start was the one I really wanted to watch. You know, like I watch games here and there, but I was like, oh, is Manoah pitching tonight? Let me tune in just because I think he's so entertaining. He just brings a different sort of flair to the mound than most starting pitchers do. So I wanted to write a feature about him and just kind of learn a little bit more about where that fieriness comes from. And yeah, I mean, reporting it, I went to games a couple times. I got to talk to Alec alone, and he honestly was like the nicest pro athlete I've ever talked to. Just genuine guy, really makes you feel like he actually is listening and cares about you, which not all pro athletes do. And then he gave me his mom's number, and so I started talking to his mom and talked to a few of his teammates as well at the Jays game. And yeah, it kind of just divulged into learning a lot about what he's like off the field. And that's kind of why it went in that direction. I originally really just wanted to focus on kind of the fire he played with on the mound. But yeah, it just divulged that way.
And it kind of creates this contrast, right, of this fiery guy who's pretty intense on the mound and obviously looks the way he does as a really big dude. And off the field, you know, he's a pretty big sweetheart from all accounts. What did you learn about Manoah and you know, how he interacts with teammates, how he interacts with family, why he's, you know, very quickly been able to develop some real roots in this city?
Well, that's exactly it. Like, that's what his mom told me, and that's where the feature ended up going, was because I asked her, like, why do you think fans have connected with your son so quickly? And first of all, she was at the game where he had some sort of stomach bug, and everyone gave him a standing reception at the end, and she was there, and she gave him a standing reception. She was really touched by that moment of just being there and seeing the fans do that for him after, you know, he gave it his all on a night where he clearly wasn't feeling his best. And so I asked, like, why has he connected so quickly to Blue Jays fans? And her answer was exactly that. It's because, like, he has both sides to him and he shows both sides to him, right? Like, if you're only fiery and demonstrative and always talking and yelling, like, that can get old pretty quickly if that's all you are. And if you're only social and a sweetheart, you know, that doesn't really entertain, that doesn't really capture people. So I think it was the fact that exactly that he has both of these sides to him that allows him to connect with people. And that's kind of where I ended up going with this story.
Yeah. Go ahead. No, go ahead.
I was just going to say, in terms of like what I learned about him is I ended up starting the story with that anecdote about him being in elementary school, and there was this bully in his apartment complex who went to school with him who kept picking on Alec. And then eventually, you know, the childish thing to do would have been, you know, Alec's always been a big guy, would have been just to fight him or just to, you know, handle it that way. But instead, like the first time that it happened at school, he went right up to the guidance counselor and said, like, look, here's the situation. This guy keeps bullying me. I don't want to fight him. We can't find his parents because my mom's already tried to go deal with it that way. That's not an option. So can you resolve this for us? And then he won some award, some anti-bullying award at the school, and they became really good friends. So I think that also showed that just like people who are at first put off by his like fiery persona eventually come around to it.
Yeah, I think that's well said, and it's a great anecdote to highlight. And we don't have to go much further than the Alejandro Kirk stuff from Twitter a couple weeks back that I'm sure everyone is familiar with. So, Oren, the headline of this article is, you know, about Manoah reaching baseball stardom at the right time. And all of these things you just laid out are why it's easy for people to connect with Manoah once they get to know him. When you look ahead to this playoff run, now that the Jays have clinched, and I know they wouldn't have clinched when you were working on this story and everything, but now that they have, and we know what how the baseball world responded to Alek Manoah a little bit at the All-Star game when he was mic'd up, and it was kind of the biggest highlight of the weekend. Heading into the playoffs, where he's very likely going to start game one of the wild card series, mathematically it looks like that's going to be at home in Toronto, and then the Jays could have a bit of a playoff run here. What is this next little bit going to be like for the greater baseball world, getting to see Manoa on this stage, and I'm sure getting to know him more. Like you put it in the headline, he's reaching baseball stardom. This guy seems like, if the Jays have a playoff run here, he's going to become one of, you know, potentially one of the faces of baseball, and certainly the face of this team alongside Vlad and Bo.
Yeah, and just to go back a little, the reason it says at just the right time is because, you know, the MLB as a sport has a pretty old viewership, and baseball participation is on the decline. It is a sport that is growing a little bit old, and it needs some people, some athletes to help rejuvenate it. And that was kind of, I saw this at a very long time ago about the average NBA fan being 42 years old in terms of average fan who watches cable, just to be clear. And the average MLB fan was 57, the oldest out of all the major sports leagues. And I was just taken aback by that. And that's why I wanted to focus on, like, okay, here's where the sport is going, but here's how it can maybe change. And so, yeah, like you said, there's a huge opportunity here for Manoa to, you know, showcase himself to a broader audience, even a broader Canadian audience, because there's a lot of casual fans who are only tuning in here or there, who wait until the playoffs to really lock into this team. So I think there's a huge opportunity for him because, like I said in the original reason for writing this story, like, it's pretty obvious that this is one of the most entertaining athletes we have in Canada. Just watching him, I mean, like, he's constantly talking to himself. I just love, like, he adds another dimension to, like, the pitcher versus hitter battle, because it's also pitcher versus hitter versus pitcher, because he's, like, constantly, like, in his own head, talking to himself, pumping his fist, shaking his head, nodding his head. I just think he's a really fascinating guy. And yeah, there's an opportunity for him to kind of endear himself to a larger audience here.
Oren, as we talk about this, just announced, actually, Alek Manoa is the American League Pitcher of the Month through 41 innings in September with a 0.88 ERA, the lowest single month ERA in Blue Jays history for a starter. So well-timed segment here, well-timed feature on your part. And I think part of what you were, you know, maybe getting to there with Manoa is, and this circles back to your right time comment and the older baseball viewership, is, you know, not that I think baseball should placate to the older school type of fan who doesn't want to see any personality and there's coded language in there and all of those things. But Manoa is the type of star who checks both boxes, where he does appeal to a younger audience. He's social media savvy. He's a likable guy. He's fired up. And then he does the things that, like, the old school types like he's a, you know, he's a grinder. He thinks through all the pitching scenarios. He's, you know, he pitched at least five innings in every one of his starts this year, which almost no one does anymore. So it's pretty good timing, you're right, to thread the needle there for Manoa and maybe for the Jays as a whole. The Jays are heading into the playoffs on Friday, and I know you've done Pulse of the Fan Base kind of pieces a little earlier in the year. You were down at a few games to report this Alek Manoa piece out, and you're a Blue Jays fan. Knowing what you know about Rogers Center come playoff time and over the last little bit, and getting to know the fan base a little bit more intimately, how big do you think home field advantage is going to be? And you come from a Raptors side where, you know, Scotiabank Arena for a good amount of time has been considered one of the biggest home court advantages come playoff time. Do you think the Rogers Center can replicate and, you know, mirror that reputation in the same way that it did in 2015, 2016?
Yeah, I mean, I was actually just thinking about this because the Jays said that they would have Manoa pitch the final game of the season, right? If it came down to
pivoted off of that now.
Okay, well, I was just thinking about that, and I was like, oh, that's a big bet on the fan base, right? Because if you're going to make your best pitcher, you know, pitch the last game of the season, then you really want home court advantage, even if it's going to be slightly worse pitching. Yeah, for sure. I think Toronto as a sports city, first of all, is amazing come playoff time in any sport. And I think, like, now more than ever, there's this added boost of, like, the post-pandemic just energy around the city, which is, like, people are very ready to be outside and to be their most, how do I say this? wild selves. Like, people are ready to get out there and not shy away from buying their booze and really cheer on this team. So yeah, I think it could be a huge competitive advantage. And I think for Manoah specifically, like, he feeds off that energy. You mentioned all the stuff about his month of August, which was in, or September, which was insane. And it just proves that as the stakes have gotten bigger, he's gotten better. And so I see no reason why, like, that crowd and that energy, why he can't feed off that and keep it going in the playoffs.
All right, Oren, can't bring you on and not ask you some Raptors stuff, even though this is a Blue Jay show. They give me 3 hours this week. I got to sneak a little bit of Jay stuff in. Last week I was sneaking in, you know, FIBA World Cup stuff, and you guys at Raptors Republic still do a great job covering the national team. You were out there for training camp, though, preseason debut for the Raptors last night. What have your initial impressions been of what from outside seems like kind of a boring camp? Like, it's all the rotation is more or less the same. We know everyone. I'm gonna dig in on the 905 guys and the Gabe Brown types, but what have your initial impressions been this first week and change?
Yeah, you gotta dig pretty deep here, because like you said, all the storylines are pretty set. I think impressions wise, guys who stood out, OG, I think looks really, really good. Boucher, he looks good. Those two guys to me look like very ready to start the season tomorrow. Impressions, I think the starting five look a lot way ahead of where most starting fives are at this point in preseason. Like, just based on what they did in the scrimmage and then yesterday, those guys are moving the ball really, really well, I thought, on offense. It wasn't always going down. They were throwing too many turnovers last night. But in general, I was really pleased with the process, because at this point, as you know, in the season, most teams are just like trying to figure out where other guys like to stand on the court. And the Raptors have the most continuity in the league, and they just, like, this starting five now, you know, we talk a lot about, like, Rico Hines runs and what summer runs can maybe potentially theoretically do for a team. It's like, sure, I'm skeptical of that, but I'm not skeptical of a year of a full season, this starting five being together, and then a summer to keep it going, and now a full training camp to add on to that. Like, I think this group could come out of the gate really firing on both ends of the floor. So that would be my, like, main takeaway from what I've seen so far.
So they do have 4 preseason games left. A couple of those are at home. And the way the schedule lines up, Oren, this team is home with an off day on Saturday. That could potentially be game 2 of a wild card series. We've seen DeMar DeRozan, Scotty Barnes, OG Anunoby throw out first pitches at Jays games before. We saw Austin Matthews of the Leafs throw a terrible one last week. Who is your pick from the Toronto Raptors to throw out first pitch at game 2 of the wildcard series, assuming everything lines up and you know, the team is asked? I'm putting this out there. So not an official choice, but who would you give the ball to?
I think Fred, if he's never done it. He's never done it?
Not that I can remember, no.
Yeah, I mean, Fred is more or less the face of the Raptors now. I'd hand the ball to him. I think he'd throw a good one.
Yeah, it's a reasonable choice. I can't remember if Ken Burch has thrown the first ball or he's just like been at the game. I've definitely seen Ken Burch at a game before. I think my dark horse pick would be Wancho, though. Play off the Bo Cruz stuff, the hustle. You know, new guy, international vibe. He's obviously, I don't know if you heard that Edmonton crowd last night. You would have thought he was from Edmonton. Maybe Wancho gets the nod.
Well, that's what I was just going to say. Like, being in Victoria, first of all, the brand of the Raptors and the reach they now have across Canada is pretty wild. Also, what you saw in Edmonton last night. But you really get to see, like, which players are the most loved. And Wancho, man, this guy gets, like, almost the loudest applause. Like, obviously, Scotty is at the very top. But, like, Wancho is getting really, really a lot of love. I guess a lot of people have seen that movie.
Yeah, it does seem that way. And, yeah, my close personal friend Adam Sandler gave me the inside scoop on Wancho, and apparently he's a very good dude in addition to a good basketball player. Also a very good dude, you, Oren. Keep up all the great work, man. Have a great Raptors season. And you, Samson, Lewis, everyone, keep up the great work at Raptors Republic. It's so great to see it carrying on successfully, and I know you guys had some big news today that everyone could go check out. Oren Weisfeld, of Raptors Republic, Toronto Star, and everywhere else. Thanks so much, buddy.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Blake.
Oren Weisfeld of Raptors Republic, Toronto Star, The Guardian. Again, that piece was called The Two Sides of Blue Jays Ace Alek Manoah and Why He's Reaching Baseball Stardom at the Right Time. You can go check that out at the Toronto Star. Couple questions in the text line before we take a little break and talk to you, Julia Kreutz. Andrew in Mississauga, this goes back to our earlier conversation with Ben Nicholson-Smith about the playoff roster. Andrew says, most players have a slight slump when they return from injury. Should Lourdes automatically put back in the lineup? I don't know that statistically that's true. Like, you've seen guys come back sometimes. Like, George Springer was playing with one arm and had, like, 15 hits in a row or something like that. I would say that it certainly changes the percentages, where if it's a tough lefty, I'd still rather have Lourdes Gurriel in there over Raimel Tapia. But if it's, if it's a right-handed pitcher, if he's not feeling 100% that day, it changes the accounting as well. Kyle from the region, this goes back to our conversation with Drew Fairservice, says he used to do public address work at the Galt Arena Gardens. Hockey equipment and hot chocolate is an eclectic combo. He's talking about the smell, of course. It's a good one. Galt Arena Gardens. What a place. Charlie and Timmons says, good vibes today. Can we get a new Yusei soundbite? A la Bare Naked Ladies, maybe. He had a fine outing. Doubt we see him in action after Wednesday's start. I'll leave that one to Derek Brandeo. I know he loves the Lisa Loeb one, so I don't want to take that from him. Daryl in Oshawa asks if the team's future plans with Gabriel Moreno influence the roster. He wants to play the best team to win, figure out the future in the future. I'm with you, Daryl, and I think that Moreno being on the roster right now tells you that the team is thinking the same way. They punted on a couple more weeks of development for him at AAA, a couple weeks of catching a pitching staff, of getting everyday plate appearances, so that he could be on the major league roster in the event they needed him. I'm sure some of that is about developmental stuff, in the sense of, you know, it's helpful for him to be in those meetings and prep for games like this and see how all that works. But realistically, they made that decision over a Zach Collins or someone else because they think Gabriel Moreno, if they need someone in that spot, gives them a better chance to win. So especially this time of year when the minor league seasons are done anyway, I think you're just putting the best team out there. One more before we go to a break. Jag from Brampton, says he saw on TV Sunday afternoon that the Mariners' fielding percentage is second in the majors. Where do the Jays stand? Who's number one? And a couple other questions related to that. I would suggest not using fielding percentage as your measure. And the reason for that is that you can only get an error on a ball you can get to. So, you know, imagine Bo Bichette gets to a ball in the hole and throws it away. Well, if a shortstop couldn't get to it, they couldn't get an error on it and they don't get charged with it. We do have a couple other metrics we can look at. You know, Fangraphs has a defensive component. StatCast has a defensive component. The Jays grayed out slightly above average, nothing special when it comes to the defensive side. Now, their individual players can be up and down, but the Jays have gotten more runs saved from how they position their defense than any other team in baseball. And then, of course, you have guys like Matt Chapman, who is Matt Chapman, Vladimir Guerrero Jr., who has a case for gold glove at first base, Alejandro Kirk, who's improved a lot as a framer and a blocker. So the Jays slightly above average with some of the defensive stuff that we can try to capture. The Mariners and Rays, more or less right around where the Jays are. Not a huge difference between those teams. The surprising one is that the Yankees grayed out really well there, which, you know, I guess maybe since they've played worse offensive lineups of late, that makes sense. But I kind of think of that team as the big lumbering older team. Aaron Judge, great center fielder, though, and they've played a lot of plus defenders around the infields and the corners. Shout out to Oswaldo Cabrera. We'll dive deeper on the Mariners or the Rays once we know or have a better idea of what the matchup's going to be. Probabilistically, it's the Mariners, but we've got some guests lined up for the week for either of those outcomes. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk to Julia Kreutz of MLB.com. We're going to talk more Jays stuff. We'll touch a little bit on Mariners, Rays, but let's look ahead to some games that are actually happening tonight before the playoffs. Jays are in Baltimore. We'll talk to Julia Kreutz about it next on Jays Talk Plus on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Welcome back to Jays Talk Plus. I'm Blake Murphy, and I forgot to change the song cue when we lost a guest and replaced the guest. That's okay. We'll maybe have to replay that song later in the week, though. It was someone's walk-up music who was supposed to join us today. We'll see how the week plays out. Jays are back in action tonight at 7:05, we hope. The weather, as everyone keeps tweeting about, who is down in Baltimore, not great. Can't be sure that the game's going to go down tonight. It is scheduled for a 7:05 first pitch. It's scheduled to be Jose Berríos against Dean Kramer. It's scheduled to be Ben Wagner on the call for you on the Sportsnet Radio Network. By the way, this series, it's Jose Berríos against Dean Kramer today. Tomorrow is scheduled to be Mitch White against Mike Bauman. And Wednesday is the old TBD versus TBD special. Now, for the Blue Jays, we are kind of wondering if that might be a Yusei Kikuchi start. For the Baltimore Orioles, it'll probably be a situation where it's either Jordan Lyles on turn, or they just throw it at a young guy like a DL Hall or a bullpen day or something like that. She's not down in Baltimore, but Julia Kreutz of MLB.com joins us now. And Julia, I have to ask, someone who is down in Baltimore, our pal Keegan Matheson, did you have to console him once it was mathematically ruled out that the Jays could possibly go to the Trop?
Hello, how are you doing?
Hi.
While Keegan is away, I take that as sort of a mini vacation, Blake. So I haven't really talked to him all that much.
Well, that's great. Lucky you. Was it a big deal, though? Like, what was a bigger deal? You got to be there and cover a team clinching a playoff berth, or Keegan saying he's proud of you after your three-year Blue Jays writer anniversary on the weekend?
Yeah, 3.5 years-ish.
Normal anniversary nice to celebrate.
You know what? It was so obviously Keegan has been there. He has been a constant by my left side all this time. So it's always nice to celebrate those milestones with him. And then, you know, watching the Blue Jays clinch was also very, very meaningful in the sense that, you know, we're all sort of evolving and developing together. It was a good weekend for sure. And now everyone just needs to brace themselves for what comes next. We're in for a treat here for sure.
Before we turn that page, did you learn anything from the celebration or the pictures and videos that came out after? Like, do you know a little bit more about any of the Blue Jays or staff at this point? And maybe those aren't things that you share on radio, but you could just give me a yes or no.
Yeah, I the one that I really appreciated was Hazel May talking to Kevin Biggio, and while she asked the question, he was just pouring beer on her. And I thought to myself, you know, Kevin is he's a very polite man. He's very soft-spoken. So it was really funny to watch him sort of let go a little bit and enjoy that moment. And again, it speaks to the rapport that Hazel has built with those guys. I think that she is so good at her job, and we see it in so many different facets, and that was just one of them. You know, just the overall joy of these guys to be around her and celebrate with her. It was nice to see.
Yeah, it was nice to see. It's great. And obviously Hazel, for years now, has done a tremendous job in that role. We also got the news on the weekend that Sportsnet will have its own broadcast of the playoff games for fans here in Canada. So Buck Martinez, Pat Tabler, Hazel May, and then you'll have Jamie Campbell and Joe Siddle. Not sure if Caleb Joseph's in the mix there as well, but so the regular crew, except for Dan Schulman, who goes over and big times us with his ESPN radio gig, but you know, that part of it is pretty cool. Julia, let's turn the page ahead then. Before we get to the playoffs, the Jays still have three games left, apparently. I've spent 2 hours of the show not at all talking about the Baltimore Orioles, but what are you looking for over these last 3 days?
Yeah, I think that there's a lot of opportunities that present themselves for a few guys here in the coming days. Mainly, how is Jose Barrios going to look? How is Mitch White going to look? And if we get a Yusei Kikuchi start in game 162, what does he do with that? And does he position himself to maybe come into consideration for a postseason roster? I think that this will work as sort of an audition for a few guys that are on the brink of that postseason roster. And that also includes guys like Jackie Bradley Jr., even Bradley Zimmer to a certain extent, and Gabriel Moreno. I think that there's a very interesting discussion right now on whether or not the Blue Jays should carry three catchers, because when you look at what Danny Jansen is doing and Alejandro Kirk's perpetual ability to get on base, if you want to be a little more aggressive with the usage of those guys, there is a point to be made about, you know, maybe you do include Gabriel Moreno there and give yourself an extra option at the catcher position. So I think that these three games, more so than simply, you know, the Blue Jays trying to guarantee home field advantage for the wild card series, will also serve as a way to answer a few questions when it comes to that postseason roster.
I agree with you, and Ben Nicholson-Smith and I talked about our hypothetical playoff rosters a little bit earlier, and Gabriel Moreno was the tough question mark. It was dependent on Gurriel and Espinal's health status. It was dependent on if you want a 13th pitcher or not. So tough decisions there. It'd be nice to see him hold a bat over this next little bit to make sure he's still capable. Haven't seen that in a little bit. The Kikuchi one is most interesting to me because, you know, something that stood out to me from the clips that we saw of the celebration on Friday was that there were a couple guys on that team who it seemed like they went out of their way to make sure Kikuchi was in the middle of it and he felt a part of it, obviously coming off of that save. But this has been a really trying year for him, no doubt about that. Him, the idea of this, the regular season ending with a feel-good, like, two-run over a five-inning start from Yusei Kikuchi is really nice. Julia, there is a small part of me, though, that worries about the other way that that could go. Do you have any similar concern?
Yeah, I mean, I think that it'll really all hinge on where the Blue Jays are when it comes to that home field advantage, right? Obviously, I don't think we're going to see Alek Manoah in game 162, regardless of what happens. I know that idea was sort of floated around, and John Schneider said that it was a possibility if home field advantage was riding on that final game. Don't think we're gonna see him. At the same time, what does that look like if the Blue Jays are still in that race? If they can take care of business today, weather permitting, right? I'm not sure where we are in terms of weather there, but it would be best, obviously ideal, if the Blue Jays didn't have so much riding on the final game of the season. And I think the fans would agree that we all saw how that turned out last year and how heartbreaking that was. I'm sure that everyone on that team is very motivated to do what needs to be done before that final game of the season.
Absolutely. And, you know, you can get some help from the Detroit Tigers if they take one or two off the Seattle Mariners. I don't know if you've looked at the Detroit Tigers roster of late or their record. I don't know that you're going to get that help. The Mariners with some tough decisions on their own end, too, with four games in 3 days here, a doubleheader tomorrow. And that's, you know, that could carry a toll into the wild card series. Maybe they make some of the same tough decisions the Jays are making. I did crunch the numbers earlier, and it looks fairly likely that whether at home or on the road, Seattle will be the Jays' first round opponent. Mm-hmm. There is still about an 11% chance it's Tampa Bay. I did not go through the scenarios where the Jays get a couple rainouts and only end up playing like 161 games this year, or 160. Mm-hmm. But Mariners or Rays, do you have a lean in terms of which of those teams you think the Jays better match up with?
Yeah, we have seen so much of the Rays, it seems like, especially recently, and it did not go the Blue Jays' way. The good news is that it does not seem like those games would be played at the Trop. So the Blue Jays can breathe a sigh of relief there for sure, because that has been really borderline traumatic, I would say, for the Blue Jays to play at the Trop this year and pretty much every year, right? And that said, if you think about going to Seattle, we know that that is a pretty big trip, a kind of a big commitment when it comes to, you know, playing three games there and stuff. Even though I think that the fan base would show up, we know how Seattle gets when the Blue Jays are in town, and that would also be pretty fun to see. I don't think anyone is picking opponents at this point, and I think that is why John Schneider has been so adamant about home field advantage. That is the priority, as it should be. On paper, I would say that the Blue Jays are probably more talented than either the Rays or the Mariners, but it is about finding that brand of baseball that's been so elusive, in which that is well-rounded, right? So the pitching is good, hitting is there, the defense is getting the job done. It's been tough. It's been tough to find that for the Blue Jays. The season has not been linear at all. That said, the Rays have been known to sort of pounce on mistakes a little bit more and really exploit them, make the most of it. So if you can avoid that in the first round of the playoffs, I think that the Blue Jays would be better off, whereas the Mariners have been scuffling a little bit too, right? Uh-huh. Just as the Rays have, but I think it's a little bit different. And when it comes to pitching matchups, yes, Luis Castillo has been tremendous, but you look at Robbie Ray, the home runs have been a problem for him just as they were last year, if not more. And the Blue Jays, with their sluggers hitting the way that they are right now, say Oscar Hernandez, even Vladdy to a certain extent, George Springer in the fall for sure, there is some advantage to be taken of that. And, you know, with Alek Manoah starting game one, as it has been floated around there, that's a pretty good matchup any day of the week, I would think.
I would think so as well. There aren't many matchups that I don't like for Alek Manoah. Maybe you could get me with a Shane McClanahan, but otherwise, for wildcard opponents, there's not a lot. Julia, you mentioned John Schneider's messaging and how he's kind of stayed on point with that message throughout the last couple of weeks. Curious as to your take on how much we stand to learn about John Schneider over this playoff run, because baseball, more than maybe any other sport, becomes a different game in the postseason. And, you know, our focus about what a manager does and what a manager's responsibility is changes a little bit, maybe. I know this is a collaborative group, a collaborative coaching staff with input from the front office and all of those things. But do you look forward to, and what do you think we'll learn about John Schneider this next little bit?
Yeah, I think that, you know, when Ross Atkins had his media availability last week, he said that the Blue Jays see John Schneider as a long-term fit, which is pretty big endorsement. He has done things a little bit differently than his predecessor in Charlie Montoyo. So he is a little bit more maybe analytical, maybe aggressive even when it comes to bullpen usage. And one thing that has been sort of his message all along and that we've seen a little bit more of is accountability, right? So when Vladdy admired that hit that ended up being thrown out because he thought it was a home run, tried to extend it into a double after admiring the ball before running, we saw John Schneider say that is unacceptable and we are going to have a conversation about it. That tells me a lot about how things are going to go in the postseason for the Blue Jays. It's not just the analytical mind. It's not just the collective effort and the input, but it's also the ability to get the best out of those guys. The way that the Blue Jays bounced back from a very, very tough series against the Yankees, I know that they were historically good against the Red Sox all year long, but what they did over the weekend is not easy to do. And that tells me that, you know, John Schneider is a big part of that in uniting the group, in saying, you know what, guys, we should celebrate this moment. We are in the postseason. We should never not celebrate it. And seeing what that does for the group in terms of motivation, in terms of morale, it's a big deal. It really is. And so I think that John Schneider is in a good place to make his name, so to speak, when the postseason arrives. It's obviously not all about that. It doesn't mean that, you know, he's just going to will this team into the World Series, but we are going to learn a little bit more about John Schneider. I think we're going to see maybe an amplification of what we have learned so far of him, which is a guy that can do both. He can motivate and he can hold you accountable.
So John Schneider obviously has this history with Vladimir Guerrero Jr. and Bo Bichette and a couple of the other pieces from their time coming up together in the minors. And I would think that that's a pretty big asset to have in these times. But there is a small part of me who thinks back to the 2019 championship Raptors. And there was a very funny moment that Nick Nurse shared on the Low Post podcast after that, where during the finals, that Nick Nurse was talking to the team about his experience in the G League, coming up as a coach in the G League, and Kawhi Leonard interrupted him and said, "This story is about the G League. I'm done listening to this." How much do you think Schneider can realistically lean on those minor league experiences, or is this much more about knowing the players and the relationship than the specific experience?
Yeah, I would say that probably the knowledge is more important than the minor league experience. I also think that the minor leagues are held in a little bit of a different echelon than the G League, right? I do think that there is more interest, there is more investment, and the players grind through so many years in the minor leagues that sometimes it's impossible not to forge those bonds. So all of that really does help John Schneider. And, you know, having the experience in managing in the minor leagues and going through postseasons or whatever with those guys will help. I do think that when you're a manager in Major League Baseball, relationships are one of the most important aspects of the job, and really making sure that you can be candid with everyone and everyone is buying into what you're trying to do. So that to me is more important. But, you know, the fact that he has been with these guys, I'm sure, is going to play a big factor into what the Blue Jays are about to do here in October.
Julia, what player are you most curious about heading into the season? I know we mentioned a couple who are, you know, roster fringe or things like that. But is there an individual who you're super curious to see how they adjust or how they perform when the intensity is kind of ramped up here in a couple of days?
Yes, I'm fascinated by Whit Merrifield. What to do with Whit Merrifield if Santiago Espinal gets healthy enough to play? And second of all, how's he going to fare in his first postseason here? So we know that his bat is definitely heating up. He is an everyday player, a little bit out of necessity, obviously. The injuries have put him in a good position to play every day. And he has benefited from that, and he has made the most of it. Now, if Espinal comes back and he's healthy, first of all, what do you do with the second base position based on how Merrifield is playing? And to a certain degree, that is also true for Lourdes Gurriel Jr. in the outfield, since Merrifield can also slide in there. Is he still a utility guy, a bench player, or has he played himself into an everyday consideration for that wild card series? So that's one thing that I'm going to be really interested in watching in the early going of the postseason, and also just how much he can maintain this production, because the lights do shine a little bit brighter, and we all know that Merrifield has been waiting a while for this moment. So I'm actually pretty intrigued as to how things are going to go for him.
Yeah, me too. And I think, you know, if right now, if I had to say, I'd say Espinal comes back into a bench role and maybe he starts against lefties and Merrifield moves to the bench or moves to a corner outfield if Lourdes Gurriel Jr. isn't ready to go. But this is kind of the good problem that the Jays hoped for when they acquired Whit Merrifield and mea culpa. It went really bad for the first couple weeks, and I was all over how bad that went. It's certainly looking like it's a little better here. So the Jays, before we get there, have three games against Baltimore, maybe. It certainly doesn't seem like it. Our pal Melanie Newman of Masson and MLB Network saying that there have been a lot of traffic accidents in Baltimore as well because of the weather today. But the Orioles, they locked in a winning record. There's nothing really to spoil. Like, I don't think, hey, we could change the percentages of the Jays hosting a series ever so slightly factors in. We know they just shut Felix Bautista down for the season, their closer who filled in after they traded Jorge Lopez. If you're the Orioles or if you're the Jays looking at the Orioles, you know, what is the motivation of a situation like this? I know you've covered a lot of road teams when they come into Toronto this year. What's on the line for Baltimore these last couple days?
Yeah, it's a weird one, right? They still have several young guys who are trying to prove themselves and who are going to try to make the most of every opportunity. Dean Kramer himself, the starter today, he is, he's had his ups and downs and he's sort of figured out his game a little bit, especially in the second half of the season. I'm sure he's going to want to, you know, close out the season on a high note because he's still starting out and sort of finding that equilibrium in the major leagues. So there's individual motivation for sure. And I would say that there's something to be said about playing spoiler against your division rival. I think that at any time the Orioles have that opportunity, they're going to try to do that. It's no coincidence that they marketed chaos as their brand so strongly in the second half after they went on that run, and it seemed like they were going to snag a wild card spot at a point there. So there is motivation for sure, but there's also, you know, a little bit more caution perhaps involved in making sure that everyone is ready to go when it really matters, which is next year. And from then on, the Orioles are going to be probably one of the most fascinating teams in baseball. I actually can't wait, and I'm sorry, Blue Jays fans, but I can't wait for them to be good and start contending because they're going to be such a fun team to watch.
And they have all the financial flexibility they want. Whatever ownership wants to spend, they got almost nothing on the books. So they can expedite this whenever they see fit. Julia, last one for you before I let you carry on with your Monday. Mercury came out of retrograde today. The Jays were really, really hot with Mercury in retrograde. Does that change in, you know, our astrological patterns here in Toronto, does that worry you at all? Okay. Or, you know, heck, that the Jays played so well through it, they're going to take off even more now.
Yeah. So, for the Blue Jays, that's tough. Very, very tough. But, personally, I'm glad. I really needed this, and it's time to start the new month on a high note, Blake. Because honestly, Mercury in retrograde, really, I really felt the effects this time. Firm believer in the powers of Mercury.
Yes, of course. This is why someone like me knows it and asks about it. Julia Kreutz of MLB.com, thank you so much for taking the time out.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Julia Kreutz, MLB.com, BlueJays.com. Make sure you're checking her and Keegan out over on the MLB site this week and throughout the playoffs as well. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to preview a game that might not happen. It'll happen at some point, I think, but a lot of rain right now in Baltimore and a lot more rain in the forecast. nobody down there seems particularly optimistic this one's going to happen or happen on time. We'll see. Not a lot of runway for makeup games here. So we'll set that one up. We'll look at the Dean Kramer and Jose Barrios matchup. Take a look at the lineups that might play. Well, the Jays haven't put theirs out yet. The Orioles have theirs. We'll do all that. And we'll take more of your texts to 590, 590. So keep those coming in. That's next on Jays Talk Plus on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Welcome back to Jays Talk Plus. I'm bringing the energy way down. I'm Blake Murphy. It is raining in Baltimore. I didn't want to play It's Raining in Baltimore, little Counting Crows, because last time I played it, people were like, wow, what a downer. So I went with a different downer. How good are diners, though? I could, like, really go for a Reuben sandwich right now at a Greasy Spoon. Derek is shaking his head. Doesn't like horseradish. Unbelievable. Is there a different type of radish or a different type of horse condiment you like? He's got nothing. No is his answer. What Derek does have, though, is a couple of clips for me that I'm going to play. We talked about this with Ben Nicholson Smith in the top hour. By the way, you can check out earlier hours. We're going to do Jays Talk Plus as individual hours, I think, on the podcast feed, because we're 3 hours right now. So you can check that out at Jays Talk, wherever you get your podcasts. In the first hour, we did talk a little bit about Kevin Gausman's finger issue, but let's hear from the man himself and then from John Schneider on how Gausman's finger cut may change the team's approach to the wildcard series.
It's something that has happened to me in the past. You know, it's probably been 25 starts since it's happened, you know, and been really good this year at managing it. You know, for whatever reason, just today, you know, finger split. And, you know, I think in a different situation, you know, even if this is 2 weeks prior, you know, I'm staying in that game. I just think obviously with, you know, the postseason coming up, didn't want it to get any worse and possibly do something to maybe, you know, it not get any better for that start. So, you know, unfortunate, obviously, would love to stay out there and, you know, we'd love to go deep in that game and pitch the way I know how, you know, but I thought it was the smart move. Unfortunate that it happened, but I mean, man, we have such a good bullpen that, you know, you feel good anytime you're going to them, even if it's in third inning.
So that was Kevin Gausman. Doesn't sound like he's too worried about it. Maybe John Schneider feels differently. Maybe it has an impact on how they'd line up games 2 and 3 of the wild card. Let's hear from the interim Blue Jays manager.
Yeah, kind of like just like a weird cut on his middle finger that happens to get flared up sometimes with his split. But I think if this is a playoff game or if it was, you know, earlier in the year, whatever it was, if circumstances were a little different, he would have kept going. But just trying to play a little bit safe.
And do you think you'll have to do anything differently with that, or is this pretty standard going into the wild card series?
Yeah, I think he should be fine. We don't, he's managed it before. He's managed it last year. Not too concerned about it at all.
So, again, not a lot of concern there. Oh, by the way, producer J.R. Manitad saying that we'll do 2 podcasts today, so we'll split the show into 2. Either way, Jays Talk, wherever you get your podcasts. We have a handful of questions to get through not related to Kevin Gausman and his finger. I'm sure that'll be a point of high anxiety as the week goes on. Certainly has an impact on how the Jays will navigate that game 2 decision. The all right, I was going to do something silly, but let's just get into the serious stuff. And the serious stuff is all basically asking me to be a meteorologist. So let's see. Rick and Markham says 30 millimeters of rain expected in Baltimore over the next 24 hours. Pretty sure this game is postponed. Looks like it's going to be a bit of drama with the weather and making up games this week in Baltimore. Someone else asks, looks like rain in Baltimore for the next 2 days. What happens if they can't play until Wednesday? Any word on, oh no, that's a different one. And then someone in my DMs also asked, said they're down in Baltimore. So for tonight's game, they're not going to call it off until they have to call it off. It's only 4:30 right now. So we've got a little bit of runway here for things to clear up. Maybe you try to get a little bit in, and hope for the best. As far as contingency plans, I think what they do probably if tonight's is rained out is they'd roll it into a doubleheader tomorrow and hope for the best, try to get at least one in, roll that over. I can't see a scenario where they make the Jays play Thursday and then go right into a wild card series. And I don't know that you can bump the wild card series start because that'll have a trickle down effect in all the subsequent series as well. What I can say, though, is that there is a fairly likely scenario that after Tuesday, the playoff matchups are set as far as Toronto is concerned. Like, Toronto's spot as wild card number one is locked in. Again, their magic number with the Mariners is two. So any combination of Blue Jays wins and Mariners losses that totals two locks the Jays in to the first wild card slot and home field in the wild card series. If that has happened, so Toronto-Baltimore tonight, Toronto-Baltimore tomorrow, three Seattle-Detroit games across today and tomorrow. If Seattle loses two of those or the Jays win two of those or any combination of that happens by then, well, then you don't really have to worry about it. They would love to get 162 in, but we've seen baseball finish with 161, even 160 before. If the games can't be made up reasonably and can't, don't have a material impact on the standing. So I think that's probably the scenario that Major League Baseball is hoping for. Not that they have a rooting interest necessarily, but they might be hoping for a couple of Mariners losses if the Jays don't get the Orioles game in so that they don't have to go through all those scenarios. That's my best way of sorting through that. AJ in Brampton asks, any word on start time of the games? I assume he means for the wild card. And AJ, I would assume that that is dependent on who the Jays draw. If they draw Tampa Bay, I'd expect to have the early game, first start. If it's Seattle, the league may look at putting the Jays a little later in order to service that West Coast market. There aren't a lot of West Coast teams in the playoffs, so you want to be mindful of that. And your other matchup then would be Cleveland-Tampa Bay. Now, Cleveland's in an interesting spot because they're one of two central time zone teams that will host a wild card game, a wild card series. One of those teams is going to have the late game. Baseball is going to want to stagger out these four start times. So someone's going to have to host, you know, maybe 9 o'clock local time, 10 o'clock Eastern to satisfy that. It's a little easier to juggle with the Mariners and the Padres if you don't have those teams in the early slots, so you satisfy their fan base. You could look at Philly, St. Louis, or Tampa, Cleveland in the early spot in those scenarios. Anyway, all this is to say, AJ, I don't know for sure, but I would think Seattle gives you a better chance of it being a little later in the day. Rupon in Saskatoon asks, how confident am I in allowing Jose Berríos to come into one of the wildcard games if one of the starters failed to go deep? If it depends what your definition of failed to go deep is here. If you're talking about didn't get out of the first inning, you might not have a choice. You might just have to do that. It's all hands on deck. It's throw everything at every game time. Now, if it's, hey, Ross Stripling only got through four innings, then no, I'm not going to Berríos. I'm going to the bullpen at that point. This is the slight argument for starting Berríos over Stripling, is that Stripling has a wealth of experience coming out of the bullpen. Jose Berríos has done it once. It was in 2017, and it was a borderline disaster. So that's a tough one. Joe in Brantford says, Toronto has a roof. Just have Baltimore and Toronto come here to play the three games. Don't know if Baltimore would care for that much. I think at that point, Baltimore would probably rather just say, well, just shut it down then. Just, uh, just do that. Nick from Toronto sends a message in, very excited about Sportsnet having our own broadcast for Jays games in the playoffs for Canadian fans. Thanks, Nick. I'll pass on those kind words to Buck and Pat and Hazel and Jamie and Joe and everyone else who will be involved. Ian in Midland says, I heard you on the morning show today, and the more I think about it, if the Jays do play Seattle, then Kikuchi should be on the playoff roster. Don't think it hurts you to leave Gurriel or Espinal off for the three-game series to have the 13th pitcher. So for anyone who doesn't know, Ian is referring to my point that Seattle starts four lefties regularly, and going into that series with Tim Mesa as your only lefty may be a little iffy. Now, Trevor Richards has reverse splits. They're pretty comfortable using him against lefties. Zach Pop has the type of profile that would maybe be okay against lefties, but it's a limited sample there. Gurriel and Espinal, that's more about whether they're healthy or not, Ian. I don't think you'd keep either of those guys off the roster as a choice of preference. If they're ready, they're ready. George from Toronto says, I keep hearing on Jays Talk that the Jays can't hit sliders from righties. I can't find stats on this, but they hit righties really well, so it doesn't seem right to me. I don't know that maybe you've heard that on Jays Talk Classic and not Jays Talk Plus. I can bring that up for you. You're going to have to give me just a second as I play with my little things and come up with it. If you are ever curious about how you can look this up, now it gets a little clunky because we're going to look at a bunch of different sliders here, and we're going to not separate them based on the quality of the slider, not separate them based on the velocity of the slider, just look at sliders in general. Now, the Jays have faced more sliders from righties than any other team in baseball. So right away, that to me is a flag that maybe it's the lesser of evils, at least, because we know the Jays hit fastballs pretty well. We know that especially a couple Jays hit fastballs really well, like a Teoscar Hernandez, by the way, or for example. So one of the ways we could try to capture how effective a team is against a pitch is a stat called run value, which looks at the plus or minus runs versus expected against the pitch. Now, sliders in general in baseball really suppress offense. It's one of the most effective pitches out there. So the Jays don't have great numbers against sliders overall. However, they're a top 10 team against right-handed sliders in terms of weighted on base average, which takes a couple different things into account. If we look at expected weighted on base average, which also gives you credit for, you know, quality of contact that just found a glove or didn't drop in or whatever, they're third. And by run value, they're fifth. So they are one of the better teams in the league at hitting right-handed sliders. The reality is just that nobody hits right-handed sliders super well. Daryl from Toronto says, it's going to rain until 7 a.m. Wednesday morning. Will MLB cancel the two games if the Jays have home field already clinched? Yes, Daryl, that's what I was just talking about. I think that would be the case. That requires Seattle to do some losing and the Jays to win if one does get in. But yeah, they'll try to get those games in on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. They want the revenue. They want the games to be played. They like a nice, tidy, regular season stats where everything ends in 162. Everyone's on even playing field. But they're not going to juggle their wild card series just for that. If the playoff seedings are locked up, you can punt a game. Someone didn't sign theirs and said Cleveland is in the Central Division, but the Eastern time zone. Well, that's just your opinion. To me, every team in the Central Division is in the Central time zone. I'm sorry for that mistake. Thank you for correcting me. Cleveland and Tampa Bay would probably get dropped into the early slot then, now that you've pointed out my time zones were incorrect. My friend Eric, if he's hearing this, is probably going mad right now. He has a take that time zones aren't real and shouldn't exist. that would make scheduling for the playoffs a little bit easier. Either way, headed for Friday, Saturday, and maybe Sunday of four consecutive baseball games should be a lot of fun, however they shake out timing-wise. So, if the Blue Jays play tonight, they'll start Jose Berríos. He'll go up against Dean Kramer. Couple things we're watching for tonight. Vladimir Guerrero Jr., 4 RBI off of the nice round number 100. Bo Bichette currently has a 6-hit lead in the American League hits totals. It'd be the second year in a row that he leads the league, which would be pretty cool. I mentioned earlier with Ben Nicholson-Smith that Jose Berríos is pushing one of the all-time worst ERAs in a season for a pitcher who's pitched this much for the Blue Jays. Hopefully he shaves a couple decimal points off that one. Another thing that is interesting to watch for no reason other than statistical, I don't know, I don't even know what you call it, just quirks. The Jays right now have 5 players within 5 points of each other in WRC+. So that metric that I reference sometimes that controls for a bunch of factors and puts everyone on the same scale. They have a lot of guys all jumbled up. We'll see if there's some separation there. Jose Berríos comes in tonight, 5.37 ERA. 80th percentile limiting walks, 75th percentile getting guys to swing at pitches outside of the zone. So what's gone wrong? Well, the quality of contact is through the roof, and he's basically stopped getting swing and miss. The curveball had struggled the last few outings. Ironically, the curveball bounced back against the Yankees. He actually had a pretty good start by his standards in terms of getting called and swinging strikes. The Yankees just jumped all over everything that was hittable. Berríos has faced the Orioles 3 times this year, 7 earned over 19 innings over those 3 starts, 22 base runners, so not bad at all, only 13 strikeouts. Ryan Mountcastle, shocker, and Adley Rutschman have really good numbers against Jose Berríos. Rougned Odor, Cedric Mullins, Robinson Chirinos, Kyle Stowers have all struggled against him, and worth noting, against a team that can start 7 lefties, that Jose Berríos has your traditional platoon splits. Jays will go up against Dean Kramer. 26-year-old righty sophomore, nice little bounce back season. Doesn't strike a lot of guys out. Limits walks, though. 3.17 ERA with component metrics that say he's been pretty fortunate to have that 3.17 ERA. He does do a good job limiting walks and getting guys to swing at pitches outside of the zone, but somewhat similar to Jose Berríos, not a lot of swing and miss stuff, not a lot of strikeout stuff. Easy to get your bat on the ball. He'll go fastball, cutter, changeup, curveball, mixes a sinker in there as well. It's fascinating that he came up through the minors with an elite curveball that was supposed to be his main pitch, and now it's, you know, his fourth most used pitch. Probably something he needs to use a little bit more, given that right now he throws 3 different fastballs and a changeup that tunnels well with his four-seamer, but his release points are kind of all over the place on the other stuff. Jays have faced him 3 times this year, 6 runs over 18 innings, 25 base runners. So they've gotten to this guy. They just haven't brought the runs around. Vladimir Guerrero Jr. has hammered him. Alejandro Kirk has been good in a small sample. George Springer, Matt Chapman, Whit Merrifield have struggled against him in small samples. If this game goes down, Jays are going to line up with George Springer, Bo Bichette, Vladimir Guerrero Jr. getting a DH day, Alejandro Kirk catching and hitting fourth, Teoscar Hernandez, Matt Chapman, Raimel Tapia on left, Whit Merrifield at second, and Kevin Biggio draws in playing first base. First time we've seen him in a little bit. Tapia and Merrifield continue to be more or less everyday players with Santiago Espinal and Lourdes Gurriel Jr. on the IL and working their way back. They would have been at least a little limited in their ability to keep progressing today because the Jays' on-field batting practice got rained out, but we'll see. I'm sure they found somewhere to run and somewhere to hit. Here's how the Orioles line up against Jose Berríos. Cedric Mullins, Adley Rutschman, Anthony Santander, Ryan Mountcastle, Gunnar Henderson, Taron Vavra, Rougned Odor, Kyle Stowers, and Jorge Mateo. So they're loading up the lefties. That's a lot of lefties and switch hitters. A lot going on there. Not surprising against Jose Berríos. Tomorrow is expected to be Mitch White against Mike Bauman. Be interesting to see if that gets juggled at all, if this one gets rained out or delayed. I can't imagine the Jays are super eager to use any of the guys who pitched on the weekend anytime soon, but if there's a doubleheader at any point, that lets you call a guy up, whether he's been optioned recently or not. So that's a potential saving grace if one gets called here. You do get a 29th man. We'll see how this goes. I'm curious what the schedule will be like, just like you guys, with all the questions in the text line and on Twitter. That it's going to be a mess if any of these get rained out. Patrick from Caledon says Merrifield needs to start playoffs regardless if Espinal comes back or not. Patrick, that's a reasonable take given how he's hit lately. You could also make the case that even if Espinal comes back and you want his glove in the lineup, you could then move Merrifield to a corner outfield, and Raimel Tapia then is the guy that moves to the bench. Someone is mad that my friend Eric thinks time zones shouldn't exist. Someone also asked with respect to the slider stuff, wouldn't a better statistic be one that looks at how well the teams avoid chasing them, as opposed to how well they hit it? Well, that stat, you didn't sign this, but that is absolutely true. You don't want to swing at them. You don't want to chase them. But the run value statistic I mentioned takes that into account. So if you're swinging and missing at a bunch of stuff, chasing bad ones, that's something that we try to account for in those numbers. Also, it was a text line question. I didn't have a ton of time to research that one. I researched it as I was rambling. So I did my best, man. I did my best. Jays and Orioles will do their best to get some game action in tonight. We'll see how that goes. Arden's Welling letting us know, by the way, that Casey Lawrence, Matt Gage, and Julian Merriweather are all with the Blue Jays on the taxi squad. Triple-A season's done. So if they're needed in the playoffs, if they're needed as a 29th man at some point for a doubleheader these next couple days, that's what's on the table. Nate Pearson, meanwhile, at the Jays complex in Dunedin, not on the taxi squad. So that was from Arden Zwelling. Have to thank Ben Nicholson-Smith as well for taking an hour with us earlier. Our pal Drew Fair serviced a spin rate. Oren Weisfeld came on with us. Again, you can check out his great feature on Alek Manoah at the Toronto Star. Julia Kreutz of MLB.com. J.R. Manitad producing. Derek Brandeo behind the glass. And all of you for texting in, for sending in some good questions. We got a couple that we've pocketed for tomorrow. And as a reminder, we are now a three-hour show until the Blue Jays are eliminated. Unless there's a doubleheader tomorrow and the schedule gets all jumbled up, who knows what happens then. Hopefully we get this one in. Hopefully we're breaking it down for you tomorrow from 2 to 5 on Jays Talk Plus on Sports at 590 The Fan. Ben Ennis and Drive Time are next.